I am going to start this talk, and this is kind of a little plan that I have as well, and we'll see how well it works, because I am trying things out on you as well, too. And so there's a book here called Transcend, and this Transcend book is the first time I've read a book where a good 80 to 90% of the stuff I say, they say as well, okay? They have a time, because they have 100 pages on nutrition, to say more things. I got to emphasize that. Are there the disagreements between me and Ray Kurzweil? I'm going to go. And Terry Grossman are relatively minor. This is going to be the template because this is what I always talk to people about, which is no matter what your symptom is, you're coming in with life-threatening cancer, with a stubbed toe, or with menopausal symptoms, you start with this approach because the underlying etiologies of things tend to be the same. And if you don't address the underlying etiologies, all you are is chasing your tail. And whether you're doing it with a drug or you're doing it with a supplement or whatever else, you miss the bigger underlying picture. So when we talk about, I'm not trying to make things more complicated, you have a symptom. Your first call to attention is say, huh, I wonder what's going on in my body. Okay, we'll talk about menopause. Why do civilized women have so much trouble in menopause, whereas uncivilized women have almost no trouble in menopause? Are they biologically different? No. Okay. Are the hormonal changes different? No. Okay. So, I wonder if it's something that lies in this area. Because I have such a push these days from people, and this is, you know, the middle path medicine. All you guys know I used to say, you know, natural medicine says this, and Western medicine says this, and the truth is in the middle. That's the middle path, okay? It's also, the middle path is also the least sexy, least exciting path, because I can't make extreme statements like a, you know, Dr. Oz and say something nonsensical and get on Oprah. But that's the way to do it, okay? And so, you can't say things that are truthful and be too exciting about them because it's different for each individual. And that's a difficult course for you to understand. And this is why being your own best physician is following a program like this. Okay. Can you answer everything with supplements? No, but it's part of it. Can you answer everything with talking to your doctor? No. Relaxation. No, but talking with your doctor is part of it, by the way. I want to make that clear. That's why it's still there, okay? Etc. Because you want people to say, you can do everything through colonics. No, but you can try those, okay? Or can you do everything through exercise? No, it's just one component. And so as we head into menopause, I have had women have all their symptoms of menopause go away completely by cutting sugars out of their diet, by exercising more. I'm not saying every woman. I'm just saying some women. Okay, so now, is an exercise deficiency disorder really exist? Yes. Okay, it really does. Exercise deficiency unequivocally exists. Okay, and so the same thing goes with all these things. There's deficiencies in these areas. And so important here, it's not just the symptom you're trying to treat, whether it's hot flushes or my adrenals or whatever else. And you'll see as I talk later on, so we'll go through each of these things. Talk with your doctor. Please look at this. I'm not going to, like I said, I have to go to the menopause part of things, but I'm going to say transcend no matter what your, whatever talk I'm doing in the future. If I'm doing a talk on integrative approaches to oncology, this will be the starting slides. The assessment part will be a little different, but so remember, no lectures meant to, this is so important. This is the talk with your doctor part. I have patients, I am not kidding you, will get them to the right level of vitamin D, and then on based upon their information, then they'll read something, oh no, I'll get scared about taking vitamin D, and stop taking vitamin D because some less educated person, seriously, who knew less, okay, who knew less about them, and they still end up listening to that quote-unquote authority. Why? Because they live at least 100 miles away. That's the definition of an authority. Somebody who has at least particular interest in a subject and lives at least 100 miles away. And I guarantee you that is a true definition of an authority based upon the human perspective. Okay, anybody who lives close to you can't be an authority. It's true. So yes, we have references here. There are some other good ones out there too. I'm not going to say, but yes, we have good information. Please, 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 if something I ever said to you in a talk contradicted whatever a doctor was saying who was seeing you head to head, listen to them because they're the one who's talking to you person to person. They've gotten to know you. They know your labs. However, if you're looking for another perspective beyond what you're being told, Okay, then yes, that's why you educate yourself about these things. But applying them to yourself takes guidance. Talk with your doctor. You guys know I'm the stress management guy. We have a whole series. We did a whole series on stress management earlier. Please, if you were to ask me, the single most important thing we can do individually or collectively as a species, it's learn and practice meditation. I've been so consistent about that for like forever. And if people practice stress reduction, guess what? A lot of those symptoms, including menopause, go away. Okay. True stress management. Assessment. And this is one thing I put, obviously this slide would change depending on the talk, okay? But there are ways of evaluating things. The most important things in life, things you can't measure, but man, measure everything you can. Okay, so once again, when you get a talk, I'm an internist, okay? Surgeons love to do surgery. Internists love to do tests. Okay. The key is we don't want to lose the patient in the test. Get data points. Okay. And the key is there's so many tests out there. When we talk about thyroid, there's this interesting movement, especially through HMOs, especially through the indoctrination of doctors, to do fewer and fewer tests. It's astounding because it's so against our nature, really, doctor nature. When we want to order more things. Why? Because it's fun. Okay. And so can you get information through testing? Heck yes. But just remember, it doesn't explain all of you. Nutrition. Please look. Foundations of Health, the Transcend chapters. This part is so key. Don't ask someone else what to eat. You know, past a few orienting generalizations, a few things you need to know. Become the personal authority on your own health. Okay? The 4-hour program goes over digestive issues. All these things are available on the website too. Supplements. Again, supplements, please look at this. And I know I'm being emphatic in this last section here, okay? But one of the things, Ray Kurzweil, probably the most intelligent man in the world, top 10 at the least, okay, takes about 150 supplements a day, okay? And everybody kind of goes, oh, like this, okay? Now, I would emphasize to you, would you model yourself over the most intelligent people or the least intelligent people? And I'll leave the rest up to you. But be exquisitely clear. There isn't a single person who's ever looked at this is going to tell you you can do something without supplements. If they have looked at it intelligently, looked at it openly. Calorie reduction. And yes, it even saves money. So the only thing out of this thing that you can say, wow, this really saves money. It's the only thing really proven to prolong lifespan, maybe up to 20%. Exercise, know all three levels of fitness. Please, for all you people who are just spending an hour a day on the treadmill, start stretching and doing resistance. If all you're working on is your bench press, please do these other things. If you go to a gym, you can almost tell the bench press guys here, man, get on the treadmill. And the treadmill gals, get on the bench press. You know, we're all focusing on one thing. Yes, we need to cross-train ourselves in these areas. New technologies. Know genomics. 23andMe.com. Look at where you're at in terms of information technology and where we're at, KurzweilAI.net, great e-newsletter about keeping you up on technology. Chance favors the prepared mind. I always love that saying. Okay. So we have to prepare ourselves. I mean, this thing that chance, this happenstance, you've all heard me talk on probably on happiness.
Is this name spelled wrong there
past year? Oh, thank you. That's Kurzweil. I appreciate that. This should see K-U-R. Can you make note of that too? Kurzweil AI. That should be an R. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And so, but please prepare yourself. You're the person that's going to have to make a difference in terms of bringing up and talking to your doctor. Okay, we'll go to more in terms of how things to bring up with your doctor. You'll have an idea if you're dealing with a physician or just as we talk about a good doctor based upon your ability to interact and discuss, what interests are out there? Are they willing to look at these new things out there? Because medicine is changing so fast and it's so important to hear this. It still takes about 20 years today. It takes about 20 years for a change in science to make a change in clinical practice. That is so unacceptable. It's frightening. It's because, in general, doctors are about as dinosauric as you can get in terms of being willing to change. Sorry, it's on average true. Detox, detox, detox. There's so many ways of doing it. This is not a detox seminar, but again, this is going to be on the website. Saunas, wonderful ways of improving detox. Okay. Please thank Miranda, who helps me do every presentation. A lot of information you're getting is modified from this fellowship in anti-aging, regenerative, and functional medicine. Yes, that's a mouthful that I'm doing. These are some of the doctors who've modified a lot of their slides. And, of course, our general squad at Middle Path Medicine. There's always a lot of people to thank whenever you're doing a talk like this. So, the endocrine system. Like, when is he going to talk about? I cannot emphasize this enough. Okay, if you left here, said, what does Gary do for menopause? And all you got was, oh, he loves bioidentical hormones. You're missing the point. Okay, because it really is, wow, if you have a symptom, check in with yourself. Self-inquiry. I wonder what that's about. You know, I've heard about detox, but I'm not doing it. Oh, then look into detox. Getting that heat out of your system and the toxins out of your body might be the best approach to your menopause, because your menopause has nothing to do with your estrogen level, okay, or your stress level, etc. So it's so important to hear that, especially if you're refractory to treatment. Okay, I have some women who, they go on a little bit of estrogen, and, oh, my breasts hurt. And even though you know their estrogen levels are zero, their breasts hurt. Okay, why is that? Because the estrogen wasn't the issue. But the doc said, and this is where you don't lose people in the blood test or the saliva test, but my test is low. Yeah, but so is a lot of women who have menopause who have low estrogen, who have no symptoms whatsoever. So it's not just about the estrogen or the progesterone, etc. Do you see why the global picture is bigger? Because especially if you're complicated, okay, I don't respond to a quick, easy treatment, okay, then you need to say, I wonder if there's something deeper going on. That's the fun of it, though. Okay, I really got to emphasize. That's where you say, my little exploration side has to come about. I'm supposed to be my own best physician? Heck yes, but do it with relish, okay, about how you can enjoy the process, not about what new drug I can take or something. Same thing goes. Obviously, we all know about the pineal gland in the brain, the pituitary. This really should be the cortex, the hypothalamus, the pituitary, much more complicated than this. So as we look down through the pituitary, talking to the thyroid, talking to the ovaries or testes, depending obviously where we're heading. The adrenals, so important, sit on the kidneys. That's what adrenal means, by the way, okay, on top of the kidneys. So it's good to know the endocrines work together. They are not isolated systems, okay? And I can't emphasize enough how much these things interplay upon each other, especially when we talk about menopause and adrenal function. You'll be blown away by the numbers about how much more important your adrenal function is in menopause and how that's the biggest issue to deal with when you're menopausal, okay? Myths and misconceptions. So, you guys know this. There's so much misinformation out there. I mean, anybody who claims to have all the answers to menopause, I wouldn't trust them. Don't ever think, because you know the information seems to keep changing. There's a relatively consistent trend in all the other things that are going around it, though, okay, which is never has there been ever any culture throughout time where a woman, if she was lucky enough to make it to menopause and she was symptomatic, that somebody didn't treat it. Everybody treats it. So the first thing I got to tell you is that should you treat your menopause? And the answer is if you're symptomatic, yes. Because every single culture since the beginning of time has done that. So, this idea. But unfortunately for many women, well, since I can't take Prempril, then there's nothing else. Pretty much throwing away the entire history of humanity by that statement. And so you're going to say, wow, that's an interesting approach. Maybe there's more than that out there. Okay. And so why am I starting off? Leon Spiroff's Clinical Gynecological and Endocrinology and Infertility is the standard Western medical textbook. Okay, it is the thing I grew up with. It is the basis of endocrinology for women's hormone. So when I start with something like this, it's like, well, what does Dr. Spiroff say? This is a doctor who's trained most of the doctors in this. And it's an interesting thing. This is Spiroff. I tell clinicians, until we have definitive randomized trial data, which we may never have, let me say that line right there. Whatever the patient wants to do is the correct decision. Isn't that what everybody's gynecologist is telling them? So the person who trains all the doctors, or wrote the textbook, actually has come to this very conclusion. because why? He's ahead of the curve. He's not one of the dinosauric doctors. And so it's very important. Wow. That means a lot of options out there, and the patient really has to drive this. Good idea. Okay. I love little slides like this. You don't have to worry about this. If I was talking about what things you would want to balance in a woman's cycle, this is a classic, again, a menstruating woman's cycle, and what happens. The main thing this puts up for me is the difference between when we talk about andropause and menopause. Real menopause is when a woman stops ovulating, and she can go from these kinds of levels of estrogen and progesterone that are this high, you know, 1 month, down to nothing the next month. Whereas guys' testosterone levels will go like this. It's a slow, gradual change. So what's the difference between quote-unquote male menopause? That's what andropause means, by the way. You'll find in the gynecological world, everything is something a pause. So really, thyroidopause and somatopause. And let's see. Okay, yeah, it should say womenopause. I agree with you. But the name already had stuck, you know, so everybody agrees. Why is menopause not for the men and womenopause? Because it would make sense. That's why not. Anyways, I agree with you. So this goes over, and then when you would measure hormones, and this is past what we need to know right now, you will hear from many sources that we need to, have a woman have periods until she's 90 or 100, and we'll talk a little bit why I don't think that's necessarily the case. Definition of a hormone. Substance produced by a special tissue released into a bloodstream. Exerts such a care. That's what a hormone is. It's good to start with basic definitions because most people actually don't even know what a hormone is. Okay? All right, let's show you a picture of a hormone. And this is one of those aha moments that you can actually transcend, yes, your doctor. This is natural progesterone. This is just a steroid hormone structure. It's very typical. Okay? This is the drug Provera. Medroxyprogesterone acetate, and anybody can tell that molecularly a methyl group's been added and an acetate group has been added, okay? And if you didn't know that was an acetate group, you could look at that and say, is this the same thing as this? And most of us would answer, no. And if you answered no, you're doing better than your doctor, okay? Because the doctor doesn't understand that. We've been taught, and I'm not being facetious or mean or anything else like that. And if you think that that might be important, do you understand that the change in one molecule of sugar at the end of a protein is the difference between blood group O, blood group A? Okay? So with one molecule can be the difference. One little sugar molecule on the end of one protein can be life or death to you. Does it make sense that maybe these changes might affect the function? Yes. Okay, trust me, it does. Dramatically. What you do pharmacologically is try to find a structure and create a drug because you can't patent this and make money out of it. You can patent this and make money out of it. The entire reason women are put on non-bioidentical hormone is to make money. There's only one reason. I'm not saying that's even wrong. That's just the reason. Okay? You can patent this. You can't patent this. When doctors, specifically gynecologists, looked at this, they looked only at the effect on the level of, on the uterus, and they said, at the level of the uterus, this drug here is so much better absorbed than this one, because it is, more bioavailability, good, check, okay. And at the level of the uterus, it works just the same as this one. We're done. We have the drug. Okay, and that's a whole industry was born for decades, okay. But the problem is that there's unique progesterone receptors in every single cell in a human body, okay, men and women. And those progesterone receptors change, and the effect's different. This drug right here causes coronary arteries to constrict. This one causes coronary arteries to dilate, okay? They designed a trial and said, women with heart disease, let's give them a drug that causes constriction of their coronary arteries. It's a real trial. It's what was done. Passed institutional review boards and everything. Guess what happened? Heart attacks. They went, whoa, how could that have ever happened? I'm not kidding you. Because this is different than this, people. Okay, so I cannot emphasize, whenever you hear from a doctor, it's bioidentical, the question was always, why did they ever use anything but bioidentical hormones? That really is the question. And the answer is only one reason. It had nothing to do with your health. It had everything to do with making money, which I'm not saying is wrong. It's just the only reason it was done. Okay? this is different than this. And remember how I said one little change in a molecule is enough to be life-threatening in terms of a blood transfusion. I could give you a million other reactions why. Huh. Take-home message. So when somebody says this is the same thing as this, you'll know different. Okay? It's a really important thing for you. When they use the term progestins, synthetics, versus naturals, we'll know that they don't know what they're talking about. Oh, all progesterones are the same. Hugely wrong. Okay? Seriously, take home message number one. This is different than this. Look at it on a web, on anything else. This, by the way, Provera, in the tissue lab, causes breast cancer. Natural progesterone prevents it. So over the course of time, what was the main thing in the Women's Health Initiative they found? It wasn't estrogens. It was this drug right here is what causes breast cancer. And huge experiment in women has always been about, let's give them the medicine and let's see over the course of time how many deaths we can cause. Okay. And it sounds facetious, but unfortunately that's the experiment. Because in 1980-something, after about 3 years of practicing as a doctor, I said, wow, I started asking questions like, this looks different than this. In the lab level, what does this do? And yes, you could predict that it causes heart attacks and breast cancer, and I stopped using it after a few years. But yes, I used it in first my career because I was indoctrinated in that way. Were you called crazy and all those other weird things? Yes, because you didn't want to kill people. Seriously, that's what makes you crazy. It's very fascinating. So then when you understand this, steroidogenic pathway, please don't worry about it. Kind of fun things here, though, please. Good fun things, I promise. Okay. Cholesterol, the basis of every steroid hormone. Okay. I don't know if many people realize that. So when your cholesterol level is rising, that has a lot to do with the fact that you're probably deficient in some of these hormones because your body's upregulating cholesterol synthesis to take care of this. Okay. Interesting. So my doctor just said I need Lipitor, though. Whoa. Why is your cholesterol elevating? Let's look at some of the reasons why, not just about taking Lipitor, which will lower your cholesterol. Nobody will say different. Notice fun hormones like pregnenolone is a precursor to progesterone, DHEA. Here's a fun one for all of you guys. What's the difference between testosterone and estradiol? Just one snip, this one enzyme, aromatase, okay? And when you talk about men in the andropause, as one of the reasons... Aromatase is expressed in fat tissue. Okay, so as men have become more obese, central weight, what happens? Many men are running around with much higher levels of estrogen than women. And if you see the guys with the man boobs, man breasts, or whatever else you want to call them, okay, yeah, that's because they're outstripping you ladies. Okay, and actually many women's testosterone is higher, and that's why they're looking more. And as you see the picture of the couples with age, how they start to look exactly alike, hormonally, getting close. Okay, and that's not, I'm looking not for an androgynous world here, okay, but I'm just saying, is that a good change for any of us? No. But isn't that kind of cool that there's one enzyme that makes a difference between something that seems so different, testosterone, and something than estrogen? Okay. And many men, when we talk about menopause in the future, andropause in the future, when they're taking testosterone, especially if they're fatty, when you give them testosterone, all you're doing is giving them more estrogen because it's whipping right into here. That's why with men, you have to measure testosterone and estrogen and other things called dihydrotestosterone. It gets quite interesting because when you give a man testosterone sometimes, you're actually giving them estrogen. And what I mean by that is it's converted so fast. Does that make sense? Okay. So, kind of cool stuff here, but it's good to know all these hormones, they interrelate. Don't have to remember steroidogenic pathways. Remember some things we could do more with docs. Measuring hormones. Okay. Now, some of these concepts are a little bit difficult, but I want to make them as simple as possible. When we talk about thyroid, when we talk about hormones, our ability to detect things has gone from milligram levels to nanogram levels to picogram levels, and it goes on and on over the decades. When we first were able to measure hormones, the sensitivity of the test couldn't pick up on these tiny 1% of this, 1/100th of the total estrogens. So all you could measure was total estrogens and get an idea of what's going on. Okay. But with time, we can now measure very accurately the free unbound, which is the active hormone. So you really want to measure free hormonal levels. And I know it seems like that should be obvious, but when you get strict hormonal levels without at least once checking to see how these levels are doing, the rest that are bound, okay, then you don't get an accurate picture of what's actually happening in the person. Why is that? Dr. Spiroff, okay, the concentration of free hormone is the one that seems to be the influential determinant of cellular function, okay? Biological activity is maintained only when the nuclear site is occupied with a hormone receptor complex. I'll show you pictures. What that means is the hormone diffuses into the cell at the level of the nucleus, binds to a receptor, interacts with your DNA, and gets the effects. One other super aha moment, okay? In this thing, especially when the doctor just measures the bound hormone, they don't even have any idea how much is free, okay? Furthermore, if you only measure the free, we still don't know how well we're glomming onto the receptor. We don't know how much of this is going on. And especially with estrogen, ladies, so important. I know this is so important to hear. What happens is estrogens cause their own receptor sites to increase. Okay, so estrogen is a feed-forward hormone, not a feed-backward hormone. It's something that suppresses its own receptors. It increases it. Okay. All right. I know I have a lot of aha moments. But this is the problem when you put together slides like this. Oh, that's important. You can't let that go. Seriously, that's just the way it goes. but what you need to hear. Okay. Ovaries. This is for, because androstenedione from the adrenal is secreted in milligram amounts, 3 milligrams a day. Your adrenal is the hormone pumper into your bloodstream. I'm talking about in any state, okay? But especially in menopause, it becomes even more important because this has gone away, okay? So, but even in the non-menopause state, if you look at 20% of 3 milligrams, the majority of the estrogen pool is coming from your adrenals, not from your ovaries, okay? So when we talk about adrenal dysfunction being the key thing, okay, I'm going to be clear about that. A woman has healthy adrenals in menopause usually has exquisitely healthy menopause, okay, because she's still going to produce, over time she's going to produce less and less because adrenal function decreases with time, okay. She's still going to produce lots of a precursor. If I went back to that steroidogenic pathway slide, and you can do that on the website. Okay, you'll go, oh, that's right, the androstenedione interconnects with the estrone. You go, whoa, that's a part of my estrogen pool. Cool. So it's so important. You mean my adrenal function has an effect on menopause? Mm-hmm. Huge, enormous, gigantic, enormous, whatever term you would like to use. Okay. Really important thing to understand. And that's why adrenal health is such an important thing. What's the most important thing to help with adrenal health? Relaxation, okay? Exercise, good sleep, etc., okay? And that's, cannot emphasize that enough. That's why that's so important. I know I'm speaking fast, you guys, and I'm sorry, but I tend to like my stuff, so I get too excited about it. So let me slow down. Questions? Huh? What was that middle thing? Don't remember the last word, sorry.
I'm going to go, just for 1 second, when you went back in your earlier slide, you talked about cholesterol, mm-hmm. It's the basis of all the hormones.
Yes, cholesterol.
So as we get older, if the hormones are not working as well, why do we want to suppress cholesterol? Shouldn't we want more cholesterol?
Well, see, because there's an entire industry telling you that cholesterol is a bad thing, and what I've got to emphasize, we've done the lipid talks, and we've got to go into that as far as that goes. We're not saying ever to blow off cholesterol. I don't blow off any number, okay? But the idea is to take what's going on with a person and say, I wonder what's causing that, okay? And I'm not saying every person with high cholesterol has a steroid hormone problem. I'm saying that's just one of the causes, okay? And so some people have genetic familial hyperlipidemia, which means it's a genetic condition, and that's a whole different ball of wax, okay, as far as that goes. But yes, we have to look at, is it adrenal function that's failing? Is it something to do with menopause or andropause? Is there some reason why cholesterol metabolism is being affected? Okay. Because, you see so many people, man, my cholesterol went up about, 70 points in the last year. My doctor said, wow, it's my genes. I'm sorry, that should seem funny to you. Because your genes didn't change in the last year, okay? And a little doctor humor there. But it's not your genes, people, okay? Just like when we did the weight loss talk. I mean, the last 20 years, okay, the most obese state from 20 years ago would be your thinnest state today, okay? Our genes didn't change in 20 years. Something else is going on, okay? So, but yes, when we got talk about that, and that's why it's pathways. And actually, if you just start with it, most people don't even know that cholesterol is the basis of steroid hormones. Okay, it is. All right. So, yes, you have to be very careful about suppressing this because there's this very narrow therapeutic window for the LDL cholesterol. If you push it too low, you stop. Basically, almost every guy becomes impotent if you get down to the levels that the cardiologist. And the cardiologist will just send you send the guy to the urologist and say, here, you need some other hormones because they don't essentially don't care. I mean, for the most part, because they're just trying to get this number to some theoretical level that actually isn't based in science whatsoever. And so, but there we stand. So, back to where we were. All right. Duration of exposure is more important than the dose. Very important thing. So many women, just hang in there. Just, you know, especially if you work with your hormones. And in the past, what we did is we give Premarin and Provera, the sledgehammer of hormones, and everyone loved them instantaneously because you're sledgehammering their hormones with these super high doses of things. And that dose was so high, it was going to treat every woman. Now, if you're trying to balance more subtly, the woman says, oh my gosh, I still have hot flushes. I can't stand it. Put me back on my Premarin because it can't wait for the change to occur in their body. It's understandable, but I'm just saying is that when you're dealing with these kinds of hormones, especially the bioidentical things, you don't get sledgehammer effects. And it's so important. Progesterone blocks that replenishment. If you remember, that's the step here where the estrogen starts feeding forward, okay, and unbalanced estrogen. So another take-home moment for you guys. Progesterone receptors are everywhere in your body, okay? So gynecologists were taught this, I promise you. What internists were taught this, okay, which is if a woman has a hysterectomy, she doesn't need progesterone because progesterone's there to protect the uterus, okay? And if she does, and if she doesn't have a uterus, she doesn't need progesterone. It's that simple, okay? Seriously, that's what everybody was taught. That's so 100% inaccurate. And now that you know there's progesterone receptors everywhere in your body, that estrogen and progesterone balance each other every single where in your body, I would never take estrogen without progesterone. On very rare occasions, when you measure certain things, there's certain people that you can get away with that. But as a general rule, you have to be exquisitely careful. Because progesterone, this is the simplest thing I can say. Estrogen's the gas pedal, progesterone the brakes. Okay, but I get into a car that didn't have both. No. Okay? I really want them balancing each other. And it's so important to think of them that way because you have to be careful about how much hyperestrogenemic you get. How the estrogen imbalance can become worse over time because of this thing. If you don't block it, and I promise I'll answer your question, with a progesterone too. Natural progesterone. Yes?
So I'm wondering, will you eventually get to the point where you don't take hormones
because
your body
depends. If we get, and thank you for asking that now, and I would have gotten to that one, but who knows when. Long and short of it, every woman is different, okay? And so some women will never need to go on hormone therapy. Some women will need it for the rest of their life. That's the answer to that question, all right? And you don't know until you know, which means you've tried everything, some balancing the person, and their body will tell you based upon a variety of things, from symptoms to signs to bones to whatever else. So the idea of ever hearing, because that's what you have to be careful. You hear from some people, oh no, you can never go on hormones. It's a bad idea. Okay. Now you know somebody who doesn't have the truth. Okay. Oh, you have to have hormones and high enough to cause a period until you're 90. Okay. You know, another person that doesn't have the truth. Okay. Every one of those people has little pieces of the truth. There's a little piece over here and there's a little piece. And some women will betray over here. Some women, they should never take hormones. Okay. I mean, seriously, that is the truth of it. But this is where, to answer your question specifically, why the person has to be their own best healer. Hopefully, by working through their own health, transcend, if you will, okay, that whole program, you'll get to a point where your body is in balance, and they will need less and less hormones, okay? And let me take this one step further, okay, which is when we'll talk about menopause. There's the acute symptoms of menopause, hot flushes, night sweats, the ones that every woman knows, okay? And then there's the chronic symptoms of menopause, which is accelerated aging. because loss of these hormones will lead to a faster aging. Okay. And if you, we talk, I was talking with my friend Phil, just, you know, if you look at aging as a disease, which I can give you a ton of models that shows that it very much is, okay, then should every woman be on hormones from that perspective? Not because you're treating symptoms, but because you're building a hormonal balance for a woman or a man, of course, depending on, you know, that is keeping them stable through life, because we're going to be living longer and healthier. And the reason everybody's degenerating and going to nursing homes and everything else like that is because we only can say, oh, I'm only going to take enough estrogen to, or whatever to get by, treat these symptoms. And once the symptoms go away, I don't have a problem. The corollary I would give to you is you start smoking cigarettes and you cough. And then you stop smoking, I'm sorry, you stop coughing. Did all of a sudden cigarettes become good for you? No. Your symptoms change. Okay? Your body adapts to the cigarette smoke and it says, huh, it's not really listening to this. Okay. So, because your body says, man, I'm tired of giving her hot flushes, nice, what's, doesn't seem to change anything, I'll just do something else. Okay, so I cannot emphasize enough, because the symptoms change, hot flushes, night sweats, and whatever go away, I could give you a lot of evidence that women whose hormonal balance isn't optimal. I'm not saying she has to be on hormones to take that, by the way. Okay, cannot emphasize that enough. But if her hormone levels aren't optimal without addition, support, etc., then you can make an argument that they should be on it just as part of an aging well program. And by the way, did you hear how boring that was? okay, seriously. Because the way to get on Oprah is to say, yes, every woman needs to be on hormones for the rest of life and have a period. Poof, Oprah. And then everybody believes it as part of the mythology of our culture. Okay, why? Because the only thing that will sell the general population is something that's not true. Something as boring as what I just said is as close to the truth as you're going to get about this. Very boring. Okay, really is. What did he say? Well, I don't know. What I said is it's such an individual thing, okay? Some women will need to be on hormones for the rest of their life. They'll know because their body tells them so. They're willing to listen to it and not an authority that tells them they're wrong or that tells them they're right. Their body's the one that's telling it to them. We're tuning into our own bodies. And some women are going to need hormones for the rest of their life, just like some people need Lipitor for the rest of their life to lower cholesterol because it's not their fault or something. Okay. And if we come from that perspective, that there is really no rightness or wrongness about these hormones, because that's the truth of them, okay, it's good for some, not so good for others, blah, 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 and we start to trust ourselves, now we're closer to the truth. Does that make sense? And I know that's a long answer, sorry. But okay. Estriol is one of the bioidentical hormones that has been around for a long time, and it has 20 to 30% of the effect of estradiol, but by using it, you get a safe estrogen, and if we went into one of those estrogen pathways, that can really work well, even though the estriol is the one that's primarily present in a pregnant woman. It's like, why would you give pregnant women hormones to a menopausal woman? Because they work well. It's the long and short of it. Have a very safe, much safer range of activity, much wider therapeutic window, meaning dosage between effects and toxicity. Okay, so big in medicine, like especially guys here, when we dose vitamin D, why am I not too concerned about it? Because to get levels of vitamin D to toxic, really, you have to get levels over 200, dose more than 30,000 units a day. And that, seriously, there's a huge therapeutic window with vitamin D. That's why everybody who's afraid of taking a little bit of vitamin D, they just don't understand. And so that's the only thing they're telling you is I don't understand. No, there's no crime in that. But you don't really worry about toxicity when you have that huge therapeutic window. When you get into certain hormones, there's a very narrow therapeutic window, meaning between effect and toxicity. Does that make sense? That's why you have to be so careful with these things, because there's a narrow therapeutic window. All right? Does that make sense? It's so important to understand. Some things you can dose, you know, it's tough to overdose on water. It really is. Okay, you can do it, but, you know, it has a therapeutic range. You can, yeah, a little bit more is better. So many things. What I want to point out, okay, your GI tract and how you metabolize at the level of your intestinal tract affects how you metabolize estrogens, and it can have as much effect on your hormonal balance, your GI tract, as your adrenal glands, okay? The type of estrogens that you put into your body, okay, the way they are methylated. I will show you a study that shows that higher homocysteine levels are associated with worse outcomes for women. Why is that? Because if they don't metabolize their estrogens down healthy pathways, which are good estrogens, they tend to metabolize them down the unhealthy pathways. So, yes. The question kind of goes into food supply and how it can, everything affects this. And the answer is yes, including hormones in our food and antibiotics in our food. Is eat as close to organic as you possibly can. I cannot emphasize that enough. I know it's not easy, especially when you're dining out and all these other things. But as much as you can within your own home, eat as organic as possible. And if you eat chicken, free-range, hormone-free. Okay. If you eat salmon, eat wild salmon, etc. Okay, and that'll minimize your exposures to all the things that you can't think about. Because yes, it makes a huge difference. Okay, the hormones in our food, huge. Okay, and the reason why Premarin was so bad is it got metabolized down this carcinogenic pathway because of the kind of estrone that it was. And Premarin is, as you know, Premarin is pregnant mare urine, right? So when women were taking pregnant mare urine as their dosage of hormones, was that ever natural? And the answer was, of course not. It is if you're pregnant mare, okay? It's not if you're a human, okay? And why was pregnant mare urine given to women? Because you can patent it as compared to estradiol and estriol. Honestly, that's the entire reason that you are experimented on. Okay. And this is also this makes me very unpopular among the gynecologists of the world, is you see gynecologists only if you need surgery. For heaven's sakes, don't see them for hormones, because the American Menopause Society tells them, keep giving Premarin and Provera, despite every evidence that it's lethal. I mean, it's frightening, because they're part of this old stodgy group that's not willing to let go of the past. That's not a good reason for you to die. This is my favorite from a gynecologist who's got it. He goes, this is my, and I'm sorry, this is one of my like fun slides. He says, this is the way, really, you want to really know how gynecology is done in an outpatient office? This is the way we do it. Okay. He said, it's very simple. Medical assistant calls you. What's the age of the patient? Okay. And then I go into the drug sample section, open up. In the middle are all my antidepressants. On the left is birth control. On the right is hormone replacement therapy. Oh, she's 42. Two from this line. She's 55. Two from this line. And that's how gynecologists is really practiced for the most part, with only, unfortunately, very little jesting. Okay. So that's one way of approaching it. Birth control pills plus antidepressants, because everybody gets those. Or hormone replacement and antidepressant, because everybody gets those. Okay. That's gynecology. That's part of the reason why I don't say to go to gynecologists for anything other than gynecological surgery. And thank heavens they're there for that. Okay. But why would you see someone whose expertise, their training, is in the surgical approach to gynecology? I'd see them when I needed a surgical approach to my gynecology. That makes sense to me, okay? This was more for another talk. I'm not going to do this one. We need breast cancer detection at a better phase. So this is a very important slide for women when we talk about hormone therapies. The burden in this age group of breast cancer is enormous. Detection before the age of 50 is horrifically bad, okay? And so we need better ways of detecting things. When we look at what the burden is and where best it benefits from estrogen, especially in menopausal women, this concern, especially about breast cancer, when you look at the main thing that you can help prevent, which is coronary artery disease mortality, is really kind of ridiculous. The benefits and risk ratios for hormone therapies of specific kinds are enormously towards benefit when you look at the percent change that you can get in coronary artery disease mortality. This obviously gets everybody's attention, but unfortunately, the women that you're dosing, really the risks of fatal breast cancers are actually dropping. They're still getting a lot of breast cancers in this age group. Okay, I want to be clear about that. But they tend to be estrogen receptor positive and low-grade malignancies. Women in this age actually tend to get estrogen receptor negative tumors, which are very aggressive. And so this goes into this whole mythology about estrogen causing breast cancer. Simply not true. Can estrogens of different types, certain estrogens will promote breast cancer, certain estrogens can take it away. There's phase 3 clinical trials on using estriol, a form of estrogen, in breast cancer, and using progesterone in breast cancer. So I got to emphasize that. The idea that estrogens cause breast cancer, it's so untrue. It was always the synthetic progestins that were the worst. Okay, and I say it that way. If a breast cancer is there, giving estrogen And there's a woman who wants me to put on my website, he doesn't balance hormones. because I refuse to give her estradiol when she has an estrogen receptor breast cancer growing in her body, okay? Now, mean old Dr. Forsman, he won't do that, but I'm not gonna, okay? Because I know that that's gonna be a growth factor for her breast cancer. I was willing to use estradiol and other things, but she wasn't willing to wait for those things because I wasn't, you know, being nice enough. But it's not my job just to be nice. I'm not gonna give estradiol to somebody who has an estrogen receptor positive breast tumor. Just ain't gonna do it, okay? Because it doesn't make sense. And some fairness, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, ACOG, they have, and this is very simple, ACOG doesn't want doctors using salivary hormone level testing, doesn't want you to do any Taylor therapy, they don't believe in bioidentical hormones. Notice how bioidentical hormones are put in quotations, okay? Now, look at that, okay? You want to hear bias, okay? They're just bioidentical hormones. There's no quotations. They're just bioidentical. I mean, the hormones that you put in your body. But they get the dick fingers, right? Okay. Sorry, quotation marks. That's what, you know, everybody, oh, you know. Anyway, sorry. but that's what they are, okay? Because, oh, bioidentical hormones, okay? And so that's what that means. Yes, they're being dicks about it. And that's what's going on, okay? And so, those people who use hormones matched for a woman's physiology. What kind of asshole would do that? That's what they're saying right here, okay? And that's the kind of inundation of material your gynecologist and your standard doctor is getting. And God love them, if that's all they read, I understand why they don't know anything about anything else, because they becoming a doctor makes you more indoctrinated than anybody else in the world. That's why they're so tough to train, because they're so sure they know what's right. And so that's an unfortunate place to be, because once people know what's right, it's always so I tell people, the mistakes I've made as a doctor is when I knew the diagnosis. And then all the material came in that could have told me a different diagnosis, and I didn't listen to it. Why? Because I already knew what the diagnosis was, which means I stopped thinking. Okay? Don't stop thinking. Be your own thinker. Okay? These are just hormones we're using. The only reason they use the real things, the progestins and the things like that, okay, is because there was only money to be made that way. And that's an important understanding. And give all the empathy in the world. The pharmaceutical industry isn't mean. They just make money. Coke is killing more people than the pharmaceutical industry, okay? So please, I don't, you know, so is this tobacco industry. A lot of people are out there doing a lot of things to make money. So I don't blame the pharmaceutical industry one bit for trying to make money on what they're doing. It's you who might fall for it, though, okay? We don't want that. And this is standard of care, determined by these things. The media, insurance reimbursement. Oh, I don't want to see Dr. Forsman. He doesn't cover. Because, yes, he doesn't want to kill you. The main reason I'm not covered under insurance. and these types of things. So, and this is what I was saying. You don't have great doctors. We got good ones, unfortunately. And this is the thing. The difficulty, not so much in developing new ideas, is escaping from the old ones. That's such a truth. Okay. And so, and yes, you have to become uncomfortable. Man, is anything I learned, and the more stuff I learn, the more stuff I don't know. And until you're really relish not knowing, not holding on to something as being true, until you really kind of free fall into that existence, you're left clinging to truths that aren't real. And there's a certain degree of comfort in that. But it's going to leave you a little feeling like, gosh, that doesn't feel quite right. The power to let go of the familiar. Sorry. But it is important. Because why? Menopause summary. And we'll get to andropause too. Okay. This goes into some of the question earlier. Menopause is not a disease, but a time of transition and adaptation. The acute symptoms, hot flashes, night sweats, vaginal atrophy, etc., give way to the chronic menopausal symptoms of accelerated aging. That's why any symptom you can ever hear of has been associated with menopause. Every one of them. I'm tired. Menopause. My joints hurt. Menopause. My skin doesn't. You get the idea. And you can make an association, by the way. Start with this. Self-inquiry. I have to look at what might be going on in my body. Because the first step to really understand, once again, remember I said, uncivilized women, great in menopause. Civilization. Something about civilization. That's a narrow here. Nothing going on there. It must be fiber. No, it's a little bit more than that. I'm sure fiber is a part of it. But you get the idea. There's more things going on in civilization. But, so a woman can have hormonal changes and do well in menopause without needing extra hormones. Yes. She takes care of herself. I see so many women come in. You guys, when I say I'm happy to be a guy, I am. I mean, it's so tough to be a woman in today's world, because now women of 60 are trying to raise children, have jobs, and be menopausal without hormones. Okay, and what? Think about that. That is craziness. Nowhere in the biological evolution of our species did anybody even come close to trying that stuff. And you're trying to do it and wondering why I don't feel so good. And you understand how crazy that is? Okay, seriously. What a woman is today is asking of herself is so unparalleled in history. Okay. So, if, and this goes back into things, if a woman is in her high-stress job without her hormones, remember, estrogen isn't just a hormone. It's a neurotransmitter. It has 40, 50 functions in a female body. And you think, gosh, I can't multitask like I used to. I'm not as sharp as I used to be. Yeah, you're not, because that neurotransmitter is missing. Okay, so if you want to do this, then you might need hormones. You understand? And that's the whole problem in civilization, is we have this idea that we're just going to be healthy, and I'm not going to take hormones, but I'm just going to be healthy anyways. Well, my insurance doesn't cover it. Well, okay, then just be unhealthy and go on, and you got to take care of yourself, okay? And is it possible? And I say, if you have symptoms, start with some of these natural things. And the adaptogens of the world, every intelligent culture has found phytoestrogens and things that are balancing for women's bodies. So take advantage of the entire history of humanity and say, huh, this is how we treated it. We did a pretty darn good job, as a matter of fact. I know it wasn't as stressful back then, but try these types of things, these types of natural approaches, because they are safe, they are effective, okay? And when I say it, that, are they as powerful as the sledgehammer primer? No. Remember, drugs are meant to be more powerful, but yet more dangerous. Narrow therapeutic window. Okay? And if that's not enough, for however long, especially before the age of 60, for women, menopause, almost every study, even on Premarin and Provera, if you give a woman from 50 to age 60, they do better than the placebo group. So I'm going to be very clear. But initiating hormone therapy after 60 is a very dicey deal. What? Because most of the studies show that the body's probably adapted to the lower level of hormones, and now trying to add hormones up just because they hear it's a good thing or whatever else can lead to a lot of problems. Okay, so I don't recommend initiating hormone therapy for the first time after the age of 60, because most women would have been menopausal for about 10 years. You understand? But if you can initiate hormone therapy, if you want to, as early as possible, it's extraordinarily safe if you use the right forms, okay, and you have to listen to your body. Yes, you can use blood tests or saliva tests and things to monitor it, but I'm going to tell you, most of my patients know this. I say, listen to your body more than you listen to a saliva test. Well, or the saliva test if it makes you happy, or the blood test. But for the most part, you've got to hear this woman, okay? Your level of estrogen or testosterone or progesterone is not going to correlate with your symptoms necessarily, because remember how we showed that it's how much of that is getting into the cell, how much is hooking onto the receptor site, how much activity, how much replenishment, how many other receptors are coming out, and none of that is being measured. So if you think you can get an idea of really what's going on by your holistic doctor going measuring saliva tests every 3 months, that the reason the ACOG was against that is because it's farcical. You can't actually do it. You can do it. But it's not based on science. Okay? Yes?
What you were saying about over the age of 60, does that also include those things?
In general, no. If a woman is still symptomatic after 60, then these are balancers. They're adaptogens. Okay? The natural herbal world is meant to help balancing. So something like this, if you have high level of xenoestrogens, which are negatively affecting your metabolism, plastics and hormones and things like that, you can actually block the effects of those, the negatives, bring up some positive effects by upregulating certain receptors that you can. The black cohoshes and the soys and the other things, combinations have been shown to do some pretty wonderful things. And so they're just not as powerful as the drugs. I know it seems like I'm hammering that one home, but if somebody came, seriously, the last time I prescribed Premarin was this poor woman came into me, and I'm talking about in the first 20 minutes we were talking, I think she had 20 hot flushes. Vroom, 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 vroom. She's like, you poor thing, you need Premarin, because it's the most powerful estrogen. I said, don't worry. I had to take a while convincing her. I said, we're not going to keep you going the rest of your life, but there's no way you can listen to anything else I'm saying. I just know it, okay? So please. And honestly, she took the prescription, and the next time I saw her 1 week later, everything was better. The world was a better place. That's why women loved Premarin. Trust me, okay? Now, what we do is find a way, and we already have, this is a while back, a transitioner to other forms of hormones, and why didn't I start with bioidenticals? That poor thing needed treatment now, okay? And so, it's very rare that I see women that much, you know, discomfort, okay? But that's where the drugs, the POW, comes in, okay? Yes?
In addition to the hormones that you've named so far, aren't there a whole lot more hormones that are regulated by the adrenal
glands,
like cortisol?
There's a whole section on adrenals, which I know I'm not going to get to, but there's about 40 to 50 adrenal hormones that are pumped out. And that's the thing. When we do these adrenal testing, we just measure cortisol and DHEA. Well, you've covered two out of about 40. How do you know what the other 38 are doing, right? And so that's you think we're doing so much with this testing. Even I order so much more tests than almost any other doctor, okay? And I'm still aware that I could probably come up with like 100 other things to measure, okay? But we don't have standardization of testing, so I know what to do with those levels. So you're right. I don't even pretend to get that I can get everything just based upon some tests, okay? But you don't give up because of that. I mean,
what I mean is, in addition to estrogen and progesterone, aren't there a lot of these other hormones that may be playing havoc with our systems?
Yes. That was easy. But yes, there is. I mean, it's very complicated. That's the whole point of this, okay? And that's the whole point. When you start getting into the kind of the web that has no weaver and the way you look at most other systems, look at energy channels and other things in the body, it's a lot more complicated when you start breaking it down into these types of things, because I haven't even worried about your estrogen receptor alpha and beta, and it goes on and on and on, and I could bore you to tears. And go, Gary, I've already done that. All right, so menopause. That's a summary slide. Okay. I'm going to get to andropause. I am going to fly through thyroid. Okay. Now, thyroid interrelates with this. Okay. Because the title of this was menopause and andropause, and I want to make sure we cover those things. Okay. Both of those. And I'm not going to fly through thyroid because it's not important. You get that, right? It's just, I want to be clear. It's about a few things on thyroid hormone testing, because this is huge. Okay. So a total assessment of the thyroid. Please. If you want, remember I said earlier that our ability to test things early on, we could measure, I'm talking about in the 70s, milligram levels, then nanogram levels, and it went on and on. Okay, I'm sorry, microgram, then nanograms, you get the idea. 10 to the third, 10 to the minus 6, 10 to the minus 9. So a doctor was raised in the 80s, okay, all you had was TSH and total T4. That's all you had. And that's all you could measure, okay? So, please, I'm not bashing on them. They didn't have these things, so, of course, you couldn't measure them, okay? You didn't have free T3. You didn't have reverse T3, okay? But the world's a-changing. We can measure these things now, and we have a better understanding why TSH and T4, although they kind of guided us in the right direction, they ain't enough, okay? They aren't nearly enough, right? And so you need to be able to measure these things and be able to interpret them, okay? That's a challenge. And again, I just saw a patient the other day. They went to, you know, USC endocrinologist, and they had no idea. Just told, oh, that's a bunch of BS, seriously, these types of things. And the literature within their literature about these things that are bullshit is amazing, okay? I don't know if they just stopped reading or whatever happened, but it's amazing how much stuff this free T3 and reverse T3 picks up on so much. So many people come to me, this level, the free T4 and the TSH, are normal. The T4 is the primary thyroid hormone secreted by the thyroid, and the TSH might be low and say, oh man, you're getting too much thyroid. Okay. But you measure their actual levels, and they'll say, whoa, the free T3 or the reverse T3 isn't what it needs to be. And you have to balance these things. Trust me, it's more difficult when you start treating this. The thing is, it is more difficult. It's a little bit more complicated. If you just give everybody T4, it has such a super long half-life. It very rarely fluctuates much at all. It's so easy, even a doctor can do it. It's that easy, okay? But you want something more than that, unless that levels are perfect on that hormone. Trust me, I prescribe Synthroid to patients, that's the brand name of T4, when it works. They said, oh, gosh, I'm feeling well, my thyroid feels good, my energy's good, and all the levels are good. That means that the T4 they're taking is going into their body, being metabolized appropriately. Awesome. Why would I change that? Okay, I just can't come up with a reason. That's a good form of therapy. However, you have symptoms of hypothyroidism. And this goes on, T4. T4 is a thyroid hormone with four iodines. Then T3, T2, T1, 3, 2, and 1 iodines. They've been deiodinated, okay? And all that means, okay, T4 is what's secreted from the thyroid. It's the storage form of thyroid. It has a long half-life, and I explain it to my patients. It's money in the bank. Money in the bank, good thing, okay? So having a storage form of thyroid hormone is a good pool to draw from, okay? But if you're at the store and you need to buy bread, you need to have cash in your wallet. You need to have biologically active thyroid. Having stuff that you can get to eventually doesn't work all the time. That's T3, the cash in the wallet, okay? It is where, when T4 gets converted to T3, at least 80% of your thyroid activity is explained through your T3, whereas 80% in the bloodstream is found as T4, okay? Because it's a nice, stable pool to draw from, okay? And in general, hopefully you have more money in your bank than you have cash in your wallet, okay? You know, seriously, because this can cause problems. You do things with it. People want to take it from you, okay? So if it's back in the bank, safer, okay? That's a good rule to follow, okay? So, well, finding more and more about T2 and T1, and I'm not going to get into those because I just got to focus on these things. But down the road, we might need to be measuring more and more of these things because that's where the problem is in some patients as well, as these other meaningless thyroid hormones. And I'm not calling meaningless. We just don't know all the effects of T2 and T1. Signs and symptoms of low thyroid production, please. The slide is going to be up on the website. You'll see it's basically everything, okay? Poor circulation. My nails are not working. My skin is not working. My muscles aren't working. My joints aren't working. My eyelids are things. I've lost interest in sex. Everything, okay? So you have I have like a hoarse, husky voice. That's with an A, folks, by the way. But you start neighing, you know you have hypothyroidism. That's one of the giveaways they don't give you in any other talk. That's with an A, by the way. So any symptom you can think of, including PMS, by the way. Okay, so loss of the lateral third of the eyebrows. It's a classic physical sign that usually you don't find it to end-stage hypothyroidism. And I'm sorry, but this is all going to be up there. Delayed reflexes. It has to go fast. This is going to be on the website. It's going to be on the website. So, it's 150 slides, and I'm already most of the way through the talk. So, like I said, almost everything. Osteoporosis. So, okay, another aha moment. Okay, because another enormously misinformed aspect of the Western doctor population. Okay, which is actually hypothyroidism is a cause of osteoporosis. Okay, it's actually one of the primary causes for it. Okay, along with hormone deficiency from menopause. And the doctors have been taught, oh my gosh, if that TSH is too low, that causes osteoporosis. Whereas basically every trial since 1980s on has shown just the opposite. A low TSH. So once again, the doctor tells you a low TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone, the pituitary talking to the thyroid, okay, causes osteoporosis. It's not true. And it hasn't been true for about 20 some years. But everybody keeps saying it for some reason because it's in the old textbooks. So, measuring the TSH, and there was a joke from one of the docs, you know, I hang with and said, like, you know, I should go through therapy because I still order TSHs on people and I wonder why, you know. I think there is some value to TSH, which is the first thyroid hormone. Now, it's not a thyroid hormone. The first thyroid test that was ever available because it's found at higher levels in the bloodstream and it was the first thing you could measure, okay. But TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone, is a pituitary hormone talking to your thyroid. And on average, it does reflect things. And when I say reflect things, it reflects if you're not making enough thyroid hormone, the TSH will start going up and up because your pituitary is shouting at your thyroid. Okay? So when TSH goes up, that means low thyroid. Goes down, high thyroid. He gives us an indicator that there's a lot of things going on in terms of why it's not as accurate as it used to be. There's lots of things that can cause you to decrease T4, including lots of nutritional deficiencies. The conversion of T4 to T3. Okay, this is the battlefield of natural versus Western medicine. Okay, I'm not going to be able to cover all of these things, but long and short of it is not everybody converts T4 to T3 efficiently. That's what the doctors have been taught. Everybody does it fine. Okay, 99% of people, T4 to T3 conversion just dandy. Because of hormones, because of all kinds of other things, there's a lot of reasons why these different types of 5' deiodinases that are three different types, and it gets very complicated, but I got to emphasize, the one that's in the pituitary is different than the one that circulates for the rest of the body. And we're finding out more and more that pituitary levels of hormones are not correlating with tissue levels very well at all of the real hormones themselves. So TSH is becoming less and less reliable. It's not the only test for a doctor to get. And unfortunately, 95% of doctors out there still think it is. And the reason being is because of the metabolism. This is so important to hear. You can make enough thyroid hormone, but be hypothyroid. Let me repeat that. You can make enough thyroid hormone, but still be hypothyroid. Why is that? Because you're not converting T4 to T3, which is a metabolism issue, which has to do with every other hormone in your body. Okay? And so I have a lot of people who are on T4 prescriptions. Okay? And the best way to make them less hypothyroid is to decrease the prescription. Okay, because the T4 they're making is literally battling against them. Because the more T4 you give them, lots of things affect this. I'm not going to bore. This low T3 and increased reverse T3. And just take the time looking at this. Stress, aging, fasting, prolonged illness, diabetes, heavy metal exposure. This is inflammation. All these things will cause your body to go into making reverse T3. Reverse T3 is the way your body inactivates thyroid hormone. Okay? So, and there's drugs that do it. It could go on and on. Okay? But I can't emphasize, unless you measure it, you can't find out if it's there. Okay? So, when your doctor just gives you T4 and a TSH, you got to measure this reverse T3 because we need to know, are there things going on in the body that are causing the metabolism of T4 into this inactive form? And the way to think of reverse T3, it's like a bear going into hibernation. It needs to slow its metabolism, okay, down, okay, and it does. That's one of the things that bears do, is go from, you know, put themselves into high reverse T3 because they need to slow their metabolism, okay. What is most Americans complaining of? Slow metabolism, they feel hypothyroid because they can have enough T4, but this level goes up due to a variety of reasons, okay? And you have to measure it. One of the primary reasons I see is excess prescription of T4. And if you measure reverse T3, you can find, oh my gosh, they're getting too much T4. And that reverse T3 is literally fighting against them. It's blocking the receptor sites of your T3, okay? It's such an important thing to measure. How do you treat? So this goes back in this goes question. You can treat hypothyroidism. Why? Because most people are probably making enough thyroid hormone to get by. They're just not converting it into the active forms. The money's in the bank. It's not getting into cash in the wallet. Okay, that's kind of basic concept, okay? You can do it through detoxification. You can use medication. Soy intake, I'm just going to be very briefly. If you have a thyroid issue, okay, I'm not saying the whole world. If you have a thyroid issue and you eat most soy foods, it can affect your thyroid function negatively. Okay, so, and I'm not saying that soy foods should never be eaten by anybody. That's not my point. But I can tell you, if you have a thyroid issue, taking soy foods into the diet in any normal amount, soy proteins and edamames and whatever else like that, you can negatively affect your thyroid function. So if you do say, I want to go on a higher soy diet, measure your thyroid functions before and afterwards to see how your body responds to it. That would be my suggestion.
Does that include the fermented soy?
The fermented soys are better, but yes, it includes them. Detox, detox, detox. Transcend, folks. Getting heavy metals out of the system, xenoestrogens, other things. These are the things that can cause problems from T4 to T3 conversion. Okay? T4 must be converted to T3. T3 is 5 times stronger than T4. We covered that. And I'm sorry for a little bit of speed, but if you go home and just get to this point, wow, I can't deal with this menopause without dealing with my thyroid. I can't deal with my thyroid without dealing with my adrenals. I can't deal with my... No, you really can't. That's why you have to look at globally. And just slapping on a prescription of something is usually not the best approach. Okay? Intracellular thyroid hormone receptors have a high affinity for T3, not for T4. And this is where you get into this battle between T4 prescriptions. So standard Western doctor, endocrinologist, T4 is the only thing you'll ever need. T4 is the only, trust me, it's pounded into their health. And endocrinologists, you just have to give up on them, okay? I mean, it's seriously, they have been so implanted with this stuff, it's just frightening. And so, and the key is that in some people, T4 prescription alone, if you measure all these hormones and they feel well, please, I'm not telling you to stop it. If you're on a T4 prescription and you feel well, and you've measured these different hormone levels, measure these different things, okay, and it's doing well, then you're on the right thing for you. You convert T4 to T3 just fine. Yay. Okay, you're on the easiest, simplest, most inexpensive version of thyroid hormone treatment. Please keep doing it, okay? There's so much literature on T3. I'm going to just go things. These are prescription forms of T3. I think most of you know that I primarily use Nature Throid these days, which is a T4 to T3 prescription ratio of 4.2 to 1. Let me cover something very simple. These things are assayed down to the microgram levels. They are as accurately made as the Synthroids of the world. So a typical thing a doctor's been taught by the pharmaceutical industry, seriously, is, oh, those things are just, you know, thrown together. God only knows what you get. Seriously, I was taught that, okay? It's not true. Very good companies make very good forms of this and assay it down to the microgram level, just like your prescriptions. So the idea that this you don't know what you're getting is hogwash. It's simply not true. So you get a good form. I use Nature Thyroid more these days than the old famous Armour Thyroid, basically because Armour went through some issues, and my experience in my clinical practice is it isn't as good a form of it as Nature Thyroid for most people these days. If somebody's already on Armour and they feel great, of course I don't change it. Nature Thyroid is porcine desiccated dried thyroid. Okay, pig. Okay, so they've shown that people feel better on these combinations, but they necessarily, when they said they did, both T3 and T4 replaced, they didn't measure reverse T3 in the study, but they didn't know to do this because it was a standard doctor study. But people did feel better when they used a combination than versus when they use even Western doctor. It's Annals of Internal Medicine is a classic internal medicine piece of literature. Okay, I just want you to know, none of this stuff is that weird. You're treated like it's weird. Seriously, I mean, patients, if they go to the hospital for any reason, like a broken arm, and the doctor there finds out that they're saying Dr. Ford's been getting desiccated thyroid, it's like, like the end of the world. I mean, it's just freaky. It's, what can you do? These are good normal ranges to know about. This is a, you know, classically you want a TSH actually between 1 and 2. I think that's a good normal level to follow. But I want you guys to hear this. If your doctor said my thyroid tests were just fine and your TSH was 3.5, you could have a very significant thyroid problem. I see people, I'd say the majority of people who come to me with normal thyroid tests have abnormal thyroid tests. Okay, because the doctor, there wasn't a star next to it. And if the lab didn't put a star next to it, then they don't recognize it as being abnormal. Okay. What's that? Then that's that most likely you're not measuring the other things, the free T3s and the reverse T3s, and that's where the answers are at. It's a very typical question. What if the number's not, you know, enough to treat? I see that all the time. It's usually enough to treat if you measure the right tests. Measure more tests. Remember, I love tests, and it should be gauged by your symptoms. And what I would do is measure every test thyroidally speaking. And if that wasn't the answer, I'd say, you know, you have hypothyroid symptoms, but those are very simple to adrenal. And let's take a look at that, and let's look at something else, and try to figure out this puzzle, because it's not always hypothyroidism, you know. I cannot emphasize that enough. This reverse T3, I can't emphasize, as low as you can get that. Once again, T3 is reverse T3, okay? This is the thing literally can think of as defensive lineman blocking out your thyroid hormone. Okay, so as you can imagine, the higher this level is, the more defenders your running backs have to get through. Sorry, it's football season soon. But that's why if you don't measure that, a free T3 of 3 with a reverse T3 of 500 can be hypothyroid, even though the free T3 seems pretty good. Okay, whereas a free T3 of 3 with a RT3 of 100, you have rocking good thyroid function most likely. And you wouldn't know that unless you measured. This is the end. Oh, one of the things. About 100 different mutations have been shown from the genes for thyroid receptors. So you guys have heard me say something like this. And again, high homocysteine and hypothyroidism. If you can't metabolize your thyroid hormone because of lack of B vitamins, guess what? You have problems. Everything interrelates. RT3, low T3 is a strong predictor of death in cardiac patients. Actually, the strongest predictor of death in cardiac patients. You can't get doctors to measure it. First T3, strongest predictor of mortality in the first year at post-MI. No doctor measures it. It's a marker of your metabolism. This is in American Journal of Medicine. I mean, Circulation. These are real journals, people. Okay? So this is everywhere. This is 10, 11 years ago. How many people are going to need to die over the next 10 years or so until this becomes common knowledge? And it might not ever, because there's a huge push for you not to measure. Why is this not? I'm back to economics. There's a huge push by the industry who makes T4 to make sure you don't get on those freaky, weird T4, T3 combinations because it would cause a loss of profit for them. So they don't want the doctors measuring T3 or reverse T3 because it might get you off of the prescriptions they prescribe. That's it. You know, I hadn't thought of it that way, but now that you bring it up. Yes. Thyroid hormone supplement. Okay, just one thing. Everyone who has low body temperature does not necessarily have hypothyroidism. There are like 3 million causes of low body temperature. Okay, hypothyroidism, one of them. Okay, so if your thyroid tests are okay, please look for something else. Don't get stuck on low thyroid. Even with this, okay, measuring all these different things, once again, I know I don't know diddly about thyroid. Okay, and why is that? The hormones, and this best way to think of it, are like keys in your pocket. Okay, and because I have the keys in my pocket, does it mean my dishes are done at home? Okay, maybe I have a better chance of getting in my door, as long as my door ain't stuck or whatever else like that, but it doesn't prove function. Do you get that? All doctors can measure is keys in your pocket. And that's what thyroid hormone testing is. We don't have a good way of measuring actual thyroid function. We don't have a way to assess the doors, the receptors. 100 identified genetic mutations in your receptors that decrease the sensitivity to those hormones. Do you think that has an effect? Are those sticky doors? You might have sticky doors. Does that make sense? You have the keys in that, and even if you've upregulated your thyroid hormone, we don't know for sure if it's getting in there. Okay? And I'm, again, if your doctor refuses to measure anything in T4 and TSH, you really do need a new doctor. I don't know where you're going to find them. endocrinologists are the last MDs to discuss this with. They're so resistant to this. It's like having a discussion that's when somebody has to, this is what you can tell. They have such a strong belief against it, you can't discuss it. And once you start talking about it, it's like vitriol against you. And there's no reason to talk about it at that point because they can't hear. Okay, and so that's why I tell people if you want to see an endocrinologist, and this happens all the time, happened last week, the lady once again went to, the husband wanted to do the best thing, sent her to USC and sent her wherever else like that, and, you know, gets the worst advice in the world because that's what always happens, and because they're more indoctrinated. Yeah. Nope. Your insurance won't cover it. You can order. Okay. In general, the way the system is set up is the MD rules. And I like that. Sorry. Just sort of kidding. Sorry. Okay. For some standpoint, unfortunately, MD has a lot of power, and they have a lot of very powerful lobbying organizations to make it that way. So most labs will not do it because they take on a responsibility for the results of your lab test. Unless you have a doctor to interpret your lab test for you, they become liable. So they will not do it without a signed prescription from a doctor because they need somebody else liable for the results of the test. That's the long and short of it. And it has to do with legality in medicine as well. And this is good old Max Planck. He won the Nobel Prize in Physics in whatever, 1918, 1920, something like that. And this is still ever more true now. A new scientific truth does not triumph by convincing its opponents and making them see the light, but rather because its opponents eventually die and a new generation grows up that is familiar with it. Okay, now this is really written in Germany. But this is the old saying, advancements in science happen one funeral at a time. That's where we're at. We're still there. Okay, and so, and that's why remember how we said how difficult it is to let go of old ideas? Okay. That's why. New ideas don't take over. Just the old people who just... And that's why you don't want to be dinosauric with them and just die with your old ideas that you're clinging to. That's why you have to be willing to let go of whatever you think is true out there, because it's probably not. Sorry. All right. I'm not even going to cover adrenal fatigue. Sorry. You guys... All right. I'll get back to adrenals. I want to cover some stuff with testosterone, because... Title of this was to get guys too, and I want to give guys fair due. Okay, covering andropause. By the way, you guys know I love adrenal function; it's awesome. Okay, but we're going to cover some of these things because we're going to go past even with this. If you have specific adrenal questions, ask me. The slideshow is going to be up. There's lots of cool material. I promise you. All right. testosterone definitely declines, and but definitely we know, don't worry about sex hormone binding globulin. Testosterone drops with age. Everybody knows this. But this is a slide I want as a take-home message about the changing epidemiology of the world. Okay, remember how we said, and I want to go back to, America has become so rapidly obese, okay, in the last 20 years, okay, that actually some of the risk factors for heart disease are completely different than when Framingham data was around, okay, because of the obesification of America, okay. Part of that, so it's really important, when we use these this Framingham heart data and all these other things, in today's world, they probably almost don't apply because, not because our genetics have changed, but the expression of the genetics have changed so much in terms of what the average person is at today. When you look at these testosterone, notice that this is testosterone, the levels in three different trials, from 87 to 89 down to 2004, okay? There has been a 15% drop in the average male testosterone in this time period, about 17 to 18 years. That means the average 50-year-old in 15 years, it's dropping about 1% per year. That ain't your genes, folks. Okay? So low testosterone is an epidemic for guys as well. Okay? And it wasn't that way in 87. Wow. Okay, so you got to emphasize, and a lot of docs are still working on this past stuff, okay, and it's becoming, and notice how much rapid it's dropped, the most recent trials, there's another trial that's going to come out that everybody is saying is so much worse than this, okay, so guys' testosterone levels are dropping, meaning the average male testosterone at any age, okay, I'm not talking about just because we're getting older, everybody said, oh, we're getting older, no. I'm talking about the 50-year-old from today versus the 50-year-old from then. Okay. So, wow. That doesn't sound good. Right? It doesn't. Okay? Because, guys, we do well with testosterone. It's an important hormone for us, just like estrogens and progesterones, etc. Interesting. Testosterone, major symptoms of deficiency. And I am going to run through this. You will see pretty much everything. Everybody focuses on sex, and everybody, I love sex, but, you know, that's not what this is about. This is about cognition, memory, energy, muscle, your muscle and to fat ratios, your bones, and this is huge for men, huge. Depression and anxiety in a male over 50 is hypogonadism until proved otherwise. And this is a lifelong history. I'm talking about new onset, okay? That's hypogonadism is low output of testosterone. And another thing you should be aware of, and this goes back into lack of pituitary sensitivity, and this is another good take-home message, okay? We used to measure these hormones, the FSH and LH, the ones from the pituitary, because they're supposed to come skyrocketing when the man's testosterone is low. You never see it anymore. We don't know why. You never see it. Meaning, the counter-regulatory effect, if a guy's testosterone is dropping, is the pituitary supposed to start shouting at the testicles? Remember how I said that the pituitary shouts at your thyroid when the levels are too low? It's supposed to shout at your testicles if you ain't making enough testosterone. And so, that's not happening at all. So wait a minute. A pituitary hormone is losing sensitivity in terms of accurately reflecting a hormone in the bloodstream. I want you to go back to what I said about thyroid. The TSH is, in today's world, is not that accurate a reflection of the thyroid hormones in your bloodstream for some reason. I don't have the answer for that. That's why, once again, whether it's thyroid or it's testosterone levels, measuring pituitary hormone levels isn't that accurate anymore for some reason because something is changing. Does that make sense? You guys got to hear this. Something's changing. Is it we're more stressed? Is it we have too many cell phones? Is it because I could give you 1,000 reasons. But wait a minute, didn't Gary say start with Transcend? Yes, I have to talk with my... Wow, is stress a part of this? Heck yes. Okay, plays a huge role in how we metabolize our hormones. Okay, and all the rest of those things. Bone loss, weight gain, loss of muscle mass, arthritis, poor cognition, high cholesterol. Remember we said that? High cholesterol in men, think the testosterone. Diabetes. Testosterone therapy for diabetics is actually better in terms of predicting survival by far than insulin, but than any of the drugs we use. Because guys with diabetes almost always are hypogonadal. Always. And testosterone gives you better outcomes in terms of prevention of heart attacks and everything else than any of the drugs we use. Again, stress. Now, very important. Okay. High endogenous testosterone and low mortality of cardiovascular disease and prostate cancer. Key operative word here is endogenous. Men who maintain higher testosterone levels on their own have massively better outcomes than the guys who don't. Okay. Now, that doesn't prove that giving somebody testosterone to raise their levels to those endogenous levels is the same thing. Does everybody hear that, right? Okay. I'm not saying that at all. Okay. But we're trying to cover the first ground that everybody talks about. Oh, testosterone causes prostate cancer. No, it's associated with a lower risk of prostate cancer, a lower risk of heart disease. Testosterone doesn't cause those things. The classic joke, if testosterone caused prostate cancer, we'd all have it when we're 18, right? I'm going to run around with all of us get lopped out because, you know, it was high then. so it doesn't do it, by the way, and no study proves that it does. Now, a guy who has prostate cancer already, for whatever reason, testosterone can be a growth factor for it. So I'm not saying willy-nilly give testosterone to guys with prostate cancer because that's not what I said. No more than I give estrogen to the woman who already has an estrogen receptor positive breast cancer. I'm not saying the estrogen caused it. I'm just saying I ain't going to give it to her if the problem's already there. You sprained your ankle tripping over a curb, I'm not going to prescribe tennis. Okay? It didn't cause it, but man, it's not going to be a good idea. Okay? So, high endogenous testosterone. And again, I can't emphasize this. Comparing 300 to 1,000, there's a 57% decrease in the risk of death. Okay? That's a pretty profound. A standard lab today will use an upper limit of testosterone of 800. That level is dropping, by the way, because of the previous data. So this is the normative curve, that normal curve that you're watching, can't emphasize, your star doctor, meaning the ones that only pay attention to the labs, if there's a star from the lab, the labs are dropping the normal levels down and saying, well, this is normal because everybody has it. That doesn't make it normal. Okay? Can't emphasize that enough. Okay? So, just because the lab says up to 800, oh my gosh, my level's 1,000, that's 200 points above where it's supposed to be. No, that's actually about where it's supposed to be. But just trust me, people, I'll do this with guys. Oh my God, but the lab says it's abnormal. And it's like, okay, but the lab's not necessarily right, okay, just because they're following this drop in testosterone that's happening to an abnormal population of patients. I cannot emphasize it enough. It's not healthy for guys' testosterone to be dropping as low as it is. It affects, all this is low testosterone, causes stiff blood vessels, hardening of the arteries, the metabolic syndrome, increased inflammation, high blood sugar. It's a part of all of this. Again, guys in the highest level of testosterone have much lower, cardiovascular and overall mortality and morbidity. Cognitive function dramatically improved. I have more guys who give them a testosterone prescription will stay on their testosterone because, gosh, I'm getting more projects done at home. Now, my libido still sucks, but man, I'm getting a lot of stuff done. Okay. You know, if it works, it works. You know, I mean, you know, and so again, I can't emphasize enough. This just isn't about sex just because it's about testosterone. Yes.
Are these studies done just on Americans?
Most of these studies that I'm aware of are American, and that goes into bias in literature and what I have access to. I mean, you know, I read so much. I mean, the translations for a lot of the literature into English is sometimes lacking. What you have to understand is they've shown that at least 50% of American literature, when it's translated into abstracts, are inaccurate. The abstracts don't reflect. This is with no language issues whatsoever, by the way. Okay, that the abstract that the doctor reads does not accurately reflect the study. I can give you a lot of reasons for that, too. Ethical dilemmas and everything. So the problem when you start getting these translations of data is that they've shown that they're horrifically inaccurate when you start getting the translations. Most likely is. But America tends to lead the pack in these kinds of dysfunctions. You know, we led in McDonald's, but we're sending it to the rest of the world. And I'm sure their testosterone will drop right with us. Something like that. Cerebral blood flow. It's not just the other blood flow. Yes, we can operate both brains at the same time. Testosterone is a vastly better way of improving well-being in men than antidepressant therapy. It's so wonderful in diabetes.
Is this a testosterone considered a drug?
testosterone is considered a drug. It got labeled as a controlled substance because of steroid abusers. So even though it's a natural hormone, great question, by the way. It's because of the anabolic steroid craze and things like that, and guys were using Dianabol and things like that, they labeled all androgens as drugs, even though testosterone is natural, okay, because they were being abused, okay? And so... Now, the estrogens are getting labeled that way because the drug companies want to make drugs out of them and not because they're being abused in general. The same story as most, yeah, the drug companies are going to get smart. They're going to be the ones making the supplements, making these other things as they catch on to that stuff. And they're the ones, and so you can get a lot of testosterone prescriptions these days that are, you know, you say, wait a minute, that's a bioidentical hormone, and you would be correct. Why can I get that one? Why are they using testosterone? Why aren't they using some weird other things? Because actually testosterone is the best form of therapy. Everybody knew it, instead of using some of the other drug versions of testosterone, because they actually cause a ton of problems. There has never been a good form of synthetic testosterone that didn't have a gazillion problems associated with it, long and short of it. And we're talking about getting your testosterone level, hold on just a second, into this optimal level, okay, and not talking about making you into... this, okay? It has nothing to do with, you know, WWF wrestlers and all those other types of things. They're not talking about any of that kind of stuff. Remember, that's the difference between moderate alcohol and drinking to abuse. We're talking about getting a hormone level into the right range. Extremely powerful for guys as well. Finding the right range. Can you improve your testosterone level, I promise, by just doing relaxation, exercise, good nutrition, organic food nutrition? Of course you can. These things can upregulate themselves. This drop in testosterone did not happen because of genetics, okay? And I think a lot of this has to do with especially hormones in our food, especially xenoestrogens. A lot of this has to do with those types of things. Unfortunately, many of them might have to do with our mom's exposures over the last years. And so even if you're born in the 50s and 60s, that's what we're seeing is intrauterine exposure to men at that level drop their overall testosterone-producing capacity enormously. So a lot of guys who have this, it's nothing they can do about it outside of taking testosterone. Again, I cannot emphasize, low testosterone and low growth hormone are what's associated with prostate cancer. I cannot emphasize enough. It's not contraindicated. Now, do a lot of guys have low grade? So if you give them testosterone, you have to measure their PSA. Because if they have a prostate cancer there already, it could be a growth factor for you. So you have to monitor for that. But the testosterone isn't going to be what's causing the prostate cancer. It's just something you'd have to be aware of. Okay? So I'm not saying willy-nilly not to monitor. You got to monitor. Testosterone replacement therapy has never been shown to cause prostate cancer. I just got to have it. It's such a common thing. You'll hear, oh my gosh, you got to be careful with testosterone. It's completely untrue. I'm sorry. It is after 7 o'clock, you guys, and gals, and run out if you want. I won't take any offense at that whatsoever, okay? So, and please do make a wish. We love them, okay? And so... And I can't emphasize, this is in everybody's journal, so you have to measure diet. Long and short of it, if you remember in that first assessment slide, I talked about, and guys, you want to measure, where's the testosterone? Estrogen, this shift from testosterone to estrogen, part of the reason guys' testosterone levels are changing is because we have a higher rate of central obesity, higher level of that, remember that enzyme aromatase, which converts testosterone into estrogen. Okay, remember it was one slide. So if we have higher central weight, we're going to convert. So what is the best ways of improving a guy's testosterone level? Losing central weight. There you go. Okay. And so almost it's the increasing estrogen level that causes prostate cancer. Okay. Isn't that interesting? Okay. It's not testosterone. That's my point. But remember, I already told you, if I give a guy testosterone, especially topically, okay, I better measure that estrogen level, because if they're a rapid converter, if I take a guy whose main issue was essential weight, give him testosterone because he was already converting too much testosterone to estrogen, I've caused one whale of a problem. Sorry. They already were neighing in my office, so bad. I'm just kidding. And this goes into total testosterone and what levels. And this was a total level. And in general, most guys who don't have some other disease, the total testosterone level is pretty accurately really reflective of the free testosterone level. So for a lot of guys, that's the number I monitor because it's a better documented number. I'm not going to worry about that. Or ACG. other quickie on melatonin, pineal gland. Just read this slide, and I'll let you think about that. We should end, because again, Mark and Amy have been so wonderful to allow us this room. We can't stay on forever, even though I'd like to talk more. This, seriously, I think you guys know I could do like a week symposium on all this stuff, okay? And get down to the nitty-gritty of it and talk more specifics about things. But questions for you? Yes. The same approach would be, you know, if I see a guy and he has, you know, doc, I haven't made love to my wife in 2 years and I've lost my only muscle mass and all these other things and my testosterone level's 100, you know, no, I'm not going to start him on ashwagandha or herbs. And no, I'm just saying, I mean, this is the same basic concept. I mean, if his testosterone level's that low, he's going to need drug therapy. He's just not going to make it that, and he's going to get it. And by the way, testosterone replacement therapy is an art form in and of itself. Okay, sometimes topical, which is the easiest way, is the right way. Sometimes shots and training the guy and doing shots. Sometimes sublingual. It's its own thing, and you have to measure all these other sub hormones. And the guy has to work at it. And guys aren't famous for working hard in the doctor's office. Okay, I tried that and didn't work. You know, how long did you try for? Oh, 2 days. You know, I'm sorry, guys, but that's how you are, and just admit it, okay? And it's like, you know, so you really didn't try. Yes, I did. No, you really didn't. But it is an art form. It really is. And so you have to really work at it a little bit. But once you find that, you know, the sweet spot, so to speak, most guys really like their testosterone therapy. It takes a little work to get there sometimes. Depends on how they absorb, how well they convert. And that's just the truth of it. And that, once again, if I said everybody just needs androgel because the androgel rep was here, it would sound wonderful, okay, but that's not the way it always is, okay? And I like androgel, it's fine. And so, but yes, for many guys, if they have mild to moderate symptoms, you can start them on many of the, there's actually this herb, horny goatweed, and it actually has been shown to raise testosterone levels. I know, as funny as it sounds, it really does. It really did make for horny goats. That's how they noticed. Well, damn, those goats are eating that, and they're really just mounting the ewes and things like that. And then, of course, guys said, well, damn, I think I should try that. And then they became his own little thing, and horny goatweed works, by the way. Okay, so there you go, you know. Observational medicine works, by the way. It's like, man, they're going for it. So, yes, horny goatweed actually works, and tribulus terrestris and other things. So there's no reason not to do some things that are supportive of our body's own natural production of testosterone. However, for some guys, just like the answer for the women on estrogen things, some guys are just going to need long-term therapy for whatever reason. And I kind of emphasize this enough. It might be to intrauterine exposure from their mom. Okay. So, and I can't counteract, I don't know how to counteract that right now. Okay. So that's what you have to think about. Again, the milligrams of testosterone, you're saying, sorry. Oh, melatonin. I'm sorry. You can make an argument. I was taught this very thing. By the time you reach age 40, you stop making it, period. Okay? And that I was taught, seriously, and that wasn't that long ago, that the pineal gland just becomes useless by the age of 50 is what I was taught, actually. Okay? And so everybody at 50 is useless. It's not true. Okay? But the reason we were taught that is because it just happened to everybody. Okay? Because it happens to everybody doesn't make it normal. Okay? So when you look at that and you say, okay, and of course insomnia is affected. Melatonin is another one of those things that everybody, they want their equivalent of Valium from melatonin. You know, I have trouble getting to sleep. And if it doesn't knock them out, they don't like melatonin. And melatonin ain't a knockout thing. It basically works with a certain area of your brain in terms of slowing this. It's called the reticular activating system. It kind of slows the transmission so your body's getting calm as you go to bed. And if you lose that, you're more likely to have sleep problems. That makes sense, right? Okay. And that's why everybody, so worried about giving melatonin. Oh, you're going to suppress your production. Everybody knows you don't make it. So being worried about suppressing something that you don't make anyways is kind of silly, folks, okay? Unless you're in your 20s. Seriously, okay? So, and it varies to this. I use melatonin for breast cancer treatment up to 20 milligrams. I use it up to 5 to 7 milligrams. It seems to be a pretty good dosage. There's a sustained release formula. There's a sublingual formula. The sublingual formula, do you have trouble going to sleep? Yes, sublingual. You want to have a little boost and have it kind of raise kind of quickly. Do you have trouble staying asleep? Then you want the kind of time release formulas. Do you have both? Then I do both. Okay. Is melatonin the answer to everybody's problem? But no, it's a regulator. If they stick with it over time, it's been shown to be better at irritable bowel syndrome than it is at insomnia. Okay. It does a lot of things in the body. The pineal function is important for a lot of things. So I can't answer why everybody's losing pineal function, but I can tell you can do something to help correct the effects of it, unless you just want to have chronic insomnia, which leads to insulin resistance and higher rates of every disease known to humanity. See? I mean, I'm not even going to hit growth hormone, but, because that's its own talk, but just if you go into the labs, the PowerPoint presentation is going to be on the website, but that's another thing to measure is where are growth hormone levels at and can you measure to see if the person's deficient, because growth hormone deficiency can cause pretty much all the same problems that we talked about in terms of, and it sounds a lot like menopause in women, andropause in men, low thyroid function, low adrenal function, the crossover in all these symptoms. So when people say, well, I don't really think I have the symptoms of growth hormone, but I have the symptoms of thyroid, then they don't know what they're talking about because they sound exactly the same. Okay? So that's the difficulty in these things. The symptoms overlap so much, okay, it's impossible to say which one's the most important one in the individual. And the usual answer is all the above. So any final questions? We got to let... Yes?
So what's your answer to all?
What's my answer for baldness? Well, I'd like, at least I get into something serious now. Finally, something I can sink my teeth into. There are topical treatments that you can use for baldness. That's all I do. You treat it as a cosmetic issue if somebody has, and there are some certain things that you can do topically, but that's a different conversation. Of course, hormones play a role in baldness. Again, topical treatments that are focused on that. Will any hormone therapy that I know of make a difference in baldness? And the answer is no. I'm going to stick with that. Any other questions? That was good. I like that. Anyways, thank you.